This episode is brought to you by the Kia PowerOn event, featuring the award-winning Kia EV6 with ultra-fast charging. Available now with 2.9% APR representative, £1,000 PCP finance deposit contribution, and 2 years free servicing when you order by the 29th of February. Take the lead. Drive electric. Search the Kia PowerOn event today. T's and C's apply. Kia Finance. Free servicing offer available until 29th of February.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, January 19th. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up on today's show, for teens, getting their driver's license can be liberating, but for parents, it can be nerve-wracking. Now, researchers have come up with a virtual driving test that can gauge a new driver's risk of an accident before they get behind the wheel. WSJ family and tech columnist Julie Jargon tells us more. And then, elite universities have struggled with how to respond to the October 7th attacks on Israel. Executives at Harvard's endowment recently visited Silicon Valley to smooth things over with top venture capital firms. We'll find out about the relationship between Harvard and Silicon Valley from venture capital reporter Berber Jin. But first, for many teens, getting a driver's license is just an important milestone, but it's also a public health issue. Car crashes are the leading cause of teen deaths in the U.S., according to the CDC. Now, researchers at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia have built a virtual driving test that simulates the driving experience and assesses teen skills on the road. It may even help them become better drivers. WSJ family and tech columnist Julie Jargon joins us now with more. Julie, what does the test assess exactly?
The test places drivers in a number of hazardous conditions, probably more than most people would face during a typical daily drive. But it's trying to concentrate that into one 15-minute session to judge how well teens can evade different hazards. So things like stopping at crosswalks and having pedestrians cross in front of them, stopping at railroad crossings.
So it's partially knowing the rules, quick reaction, feeling comfortable in control of the vehicle?
Yeah, it's all of those things. I mean, they're looking at how quickly the teens make turns. Can they drive straight on a straightaway without swerving? Are they driving within the speed limit? The test also has a feature where they're measuring where the young driver's eyes are looking. Are they looking in the right places for potential hazards?
Okay, seems like a lot of different things are being assessed all at the same time. How do we know that is an accurate representation of how good a driver is?
Well, these researchers conducted a fairly comprehensive study where they looked at nearly 17,000 young drivers in Ohio over about a 2-year period. These young people were given these virtual assessments. And then they looked at police records in the year after those young drivers took the virtual assessments to see how many of them got into accidents in that first year of driving with their license. And they were able to find that the test takers on the virtual test who did really well ended up having a 10% lower than average crash risk during that first year of driving. The young drivers who on that virtual assessment experienced major problems had an 11% higher than average chance of getting into a wreck.
Yeah, I'm curious if it feels like you're playing a video game or if it actually feels like you're behind the wheel.
It does look like a video game in terms of the graphics, but when drivers take the test, they're actually sitting at a desk, they've got a steering wheel, and they have a brake pedal and a gas pedal, and then they have the screen on a laptop in front of them where they can see this sort of virtual city that they're driving through. It's not crazy like Grand Theft Auto, where people are jumping out and doing crazy things, but it does seem like a fairly realistic simulation of driving.
The technology assesses how well teens drive, but how does that actually turn teens into better drivers?
The next stage that these researchers want to look at, the idea is to give people input in it, and it will specifically provide teens with a report after the fact explaining what aspects of their driving need improving. If they're driving too fast, if they don't stop in time at crosswalks, or they're taking turns too sharply, they will get feedback on all of those things so they can see what they need to improve on. Then it's up to parents to decide, okay, do I want to do some additional practice with my kid out driving when they have their learners engineer's permit and have them practice those specific things that were pointed out as being problematic? Do I want to enroll them in driving lessons? These researchers are going to study that starting this spring. They have some funding to try to determine what type of intervention is most effective at helping young people improve their driving skills.
That was our family and tech columnist, Julie Jargon. Coming up, why executives from Harvard's endowment are trying to smooth things over with some of Silicon Valley's leading venture capital firms. That's after the break.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom. Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
After the October 7th attacks on Israel, elite universities like Harvard struggled with how to respond. Some critics say schools didn't move quickly or forcefully enough to condemn Hamas and denounce anti-Semitism, and specifically criticized what they viewed as Harvard's weak response under former President Claudine Gay. Among those critics, some of Silicon Valley's top venture capital investors. Executives in charge of Harvard's $51 billion endowment recently visited Silicon Valley in an effort to smooth things over. Here to tell us more about the relationship and how it might change in the future is WSJ venture capital reporter Berber Jin. Berber, tell me about the relationship between some of these Silicon Valley VCs and Harvard.
So venture funds take money from outside investors. So they take money from pension funds, they take money from family offices. And one really important and prestigious source of capital that venture funds try and raise money from is university endowments. Historically, endowments have been amongst the most prized investors to have in venture funds just because they're seen to be serving a very important mission of educating students. And to have Harvard as one of your investors is a really big deal. You know, historically, Silicon Valley has had a very close relationship with Israeli startups. Venture firms have invested billions of dollars into Israeli companies. You've had a lot of venture firms open up offices in Israel. And a lot of the most influential investors in the Valley have very close ties to that region.
And in terms of how important venture capital is to that endowment, how does this compare to other high-profile universities?
Venture capital has become an increasingly important part of that portfolio just because a really good venture set of investments in venture funds gives you exposure to really high-performing startups like Airbnb, Uber, DoorDash. Those startups and the venture funds that have invested in them can give you a really big return on your initial investment. And so for the past 5 or 10 years, endowments, a lot of the profits they've made and the returns they've made have been driven by the strong performance of their venture portfolio, given how many big companies in Silicon Valley have taken off and gone public. In the past, Harvard has actually lagged behind other university endowments like Yale, which was very early in investing a sizable amount of their endowment into Silicon Valley. Harvard has been very active about changing that. They have invested in a lot of the top funds. And even though the venture and startup industry isn't doing great right now, these endowments, including Harvard, they still see it as a long-term strategy, and they very much want to continue building those relationships and increasing their exposure to venture capital.
Money managers in charge of Harvard's endowment recently visited Silicon Valley to smooth things over. Who did they meet with?
They met with basically a who's who of the top venture funds in Silicon Valley. So they met with Sequoia Capital, which has made early investments in Airbnb, Google, and Yahoo. They met with Kleiner Perkins. They met with Andreessen Horowitz. They met with Elad Gil, who is an Israeli-born investor who's invested in Coinbase and Instacart and Stripe. He's a really big name in the Valley, and Harvard was an early investor in his funds. And they also met with Patrick Collison, who is the CEO of payments company Stripe, one of the most valuable startups in Silicon Valley. And Harvard is actually a direct investor in Stripe.
What might this tension mean for the future of the university, its endowment, and its relationship to Silicon Valley?
It's interesting because there's always been this tension within Silicon Valley where endowments are the most prized investors in venture funds. If you're a top venture fund, the way to build legitimacy is to have an investor like Harvard into your funds. But you know, a lot of venture capitalists have also criticized what they've seen as a sort of flawed culture on university campuses. They criticize DEI, they criticize political correctness, they criticize what they perceive to be like a leftist sympathy that students and professors have on university campuses. And that tension has always existed. And what happened with the Hamas attacks is that it exploded all of these frustrations and it crystallized into, why was university not doing more to protect Jewish students? Why was university so weak in condemning Hamas? And so it blew that tension out into the open. Going forward, it could contribute to a slow change in values and how venture firms think about where they want to take their money from.
That was our VC reporter, Berber Jin. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang. I'm your host, Alex Osola. Our supervising producer is Catherine Millsop. Our development producer is Aisha Al-Muslim. Scott Soloway and Chris Zinsley are the deputy editors, and Philana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back this afternoon with our TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.